From the heart of the Kootenays, this is the Friends of Kootenay Lake podcast series, Voices of the Lake.
A podcast that will help you to identify local leaders in our communities and keep you up to date on all the progressive movements, initiatives, and groups working to secure a sustainable future for our region. We're your hosts,
Camille LeBlanc
and Kayla Tillipaw, broadcasting from the traditional territories of the Tunaha, the Sinaichkst, the Sxwemk, and Sealh First Nations. Today we're speaking with Laura Sachs, climate scientist and chapter leader of the Nelson West Kootenay Citizens Climate Lobby. I had the pleasure of being taught by Laura when she gave a guest lecture in one of my college sustainability courses. I have also attended one of her presentations, and one thing that stands out about the way Laura talks about climate change is she acknowledges real-world perspectives and caters to a diverse audience. She understands the different points of view and within our communities and societies and works to create common ground.
Anyone who has had the pleasure of seeing Laura Sachs speak knows how she manages to radiate positivity while talking about the complex topic of climate change. Laura and her team at Citizens Climate Lobby have hosted a number of workshops in the Kootenay Lake area that have done more than strictly speak on climate science, but also address the emotional toll that this crisis has on communities. Workshops on how to practice self-care as a climate activist have spoken to the issue of burnout, an often overlooked consequence of climate activism.
In this episode, we talk about the Citizens Climate Lobby, Fridays for the Future and youth activism, the challenges of educating people on climate change, lobbying at a local government level, what that entails, and the challenges that go along with it, the shifting of perspectives relating to the climate crisis, maintaining a positive outlook for the future, while also acknowledging the emotional toll of climate grief and learning self-care. We also talk about Laura's experience hosting the Kootenay Co-op radio show, Climate of Change.
Laura was a featured speaker at Friends of Kootenay Lake's 2019 Kootenay Lake Summit, and she, along with Fridays for the Future organizers, ended an evening focused on climate change with a saying taken from youth-led climate demonstrations. We are unstoppable. Another world is possible.
You're listening to Out There by First After the Fire. The song immediately makes me think of hiking in the Selkirk and Purcell Mountains when I listen to it. Visuals of views, clouds, water, and wildlife fill my mind. Thank you so much, First After the Fire. You can hear more of their music on their website, firstafterthefire.com, on Facebook, or on Spotify.
Calling out a new day, time runs like a river, carry it away.
So Laura, we just wanted to thank you so much for taking the time to be here today and to have this conversation with us and provide the abounding knowledge that you have to our listeners and to us personally. So thank you so much for your time.
Oh, absolutely, and really feel honored to be invited to participate in this. So thanks.
So the first question is a bit of an icebreaker. What was your last experience or adventure on or around Kootenay Lake?
Well, I love taking a paddle on the lake. We got there really early. I think it was probably in August, just over there at the end, just past Balfour, and paddled south a bit and explored some of the shoreline. And it just was early, and so no boats were out, and the lake was glass, and it was just so beautiful. And it just felt so wonderful to be in the moment and in this beautiful, beautiful space, and paddling back north, of course, you get all the mountains. And it was just so nice to be out there before the crowds, because by the time it was a Saturday, so by the time we were heading back, you know, just 10 or 11 o'clock, all the boats were buzzing by, and, you know, that whole sort of bubble burst of being, you know, one with the sort of the lake and the ecosystems around it.
Yeah, that south end of the lake is just amazing, right? As you come around that corner, it's so wild. It's really beautiful. Having those moments with the lake where it's just glass is the most peaceful thing ever. I'm glad you got to get out there. Can you tell us a bit about yourself and the work you do in the Kootenay Lake area?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Well, my background originally is in the sciences. And so I worked as a hydrologist for a number of years, not in this area specifically, but looking at climate change came initially through that lens, doing some additional coursework and things like that, and saying, whoa, we are headed towards really horrible times with this business as usual model that we've been tracking. So that was kind of like a wake-up call for me. I knew that climate change was an issue, and I always typically engaged it like thinking about my own personal carbon footprint, which is actually, I feel like, a little bit of a selfish way to be looking at it, even though a lot of environmental groups at that time were kind of, you know, saying that this is what you need to do, you know, like drive less. It's all about doing less, you know, hanging your clothes on the line. Well, that's great. And changing light bulbs, you know, those little steps. But it just ends up making me feel horribly guilty every time I did anything. And I felt sort of trapped in this system that really is what needs changing. And so for me, I felt like I needed to get beyond that personal thing and find people in the community so I wasn't by myself. And at that time, there really wasn't any group that was specifically focused on climate. And so I discovered the organization Citizens Climate Lobby. And so I decided to start a local chapter of that. And what I really liked about Citizens Climate Lobby, or CCL, is the main overarching goals is creating political will to address the climate crisis and have a livable planet. And the other one I felt really resonated with me a lot was being empowered to make a difference and having resources to help you as a volunteer. I think that getting outside your comfort zone is really important, and a lot of people tend to want to stay safe for good reasons of protecting yourself, and especially when climate change sometimes is contentious when you have conversations. I really appreciated the messaging of empowering and reclaiming, you know, personal and political powers of being able to sort of engage. And so since starting the local chapter, we've have a really great group of people that are involved, maybe, 20-25 people that are actively involved in our local, it's a Nelson West Kootenai chapter. And one thing that's also, I think, unique about the approach is that we always try to come from a place of respect and gratitude when we have conversations. And so trying to find ways to bridge those divides, talk to representatives, elected representatives, or individuals that may have different views and opinions, I think it's really key, because we just stick in our silos. It seems like nothing happens except for the partisan divide and polarization and things like that just get stronger.
Thank you, Laura. It's really great to hear that you're taking an approach like that, you know, to eliminate that polarization and that cognitive dissonance that we tend to see with more blunt forces. So it's really interesting. I was wondering, Laura, was there for you like a pivotal turning point that really drove you to take action on climate change?
You know, that's a really good question, because, you know, like, I've known about climate change for so many years, since working my master's degree in the late 80s, actually. And I mentioned, you know, that personal carbon footprint thing, and, you know, I had a farm, growing my own food, those kind of things. But one moment that made me feel really disempowered was watching An Inconvenient Truth with my daughters, who were young teenagers at the time. And my older daughter walked out and said, "This is just another doom and gloom movie, you know, and there's nothing we can do." And I really kind of felt that way too, and I didn't really know how to address that. And I spent a lot of years sort of pussyfooting around the issue at home because of that. And several years later, I was taking a renewable energy class. It was a 6-week intensive at Selkirk College. And most of the other people in that program were all quite a bit younger than me, in their, you know, mid to late 20s, and were so optimistic. And it really felt sort of surprising. But I know it's some of it's the age, you know, people are, and I was feeling really down about the whole topic. And then we went to go and see a speaker who came locally. She's a science journalist named Alana Mitchell. And I went with a few of these young people, and you know what? She just started talking. She wrote the book called Seasick, and she started talking about this evil troika of things, three different things that are making our oceans worse, and together they make them even, you know, worse. So ocean acidification, warming of the oceans, and the loss of oxygen. And those young people that I was with, I just watched them feel more and more like, just watched them going down, you know, and oh my God, you know, and I felt so responsible because I felt like the same way as I did with my kids. And something about that moment just made me feel like, wow, you know what? It's my responsibility to do more. And I think that was maybe one of the moments that kind of kicked me into more action and just saying, no, it's no longer okay to just stay safe in my little silo, but to do more.
I can definitely relate to that feeling of dread when you're hearing all this information and it's sort of taking your energy away and then sort of making it harder to take action when you're moving from that place of just, I guess, being just depressed, the state of the world. So I've heard you speak a few times and you always are very talented at having that optimism and putting that through and focusing on that direct action. I'm wanting to know, what direct action are Citizens Climate Lobby doing in the Kootenai Lake area?
Yeah, so, well, I think that the one thing that I think we try to communicate is that there's still hope. There's things that we can do, and it's active hope, being involved. And so, well, I mean, there's a lot of different things that are time sensitive. Like we helped with the 2040 film screening, which if you saw that, we hosted with the Eco Society, and that really tries to focus on how we can create that better world. And I love the term fact-based dreaming, you know, like that we have solutions and we can create a better future. And something that I try to communicate, I have been giving talks in the community. CCL, we had done a lot of outreach, but because of the pandemic, obviously we're having to find some other creative ways to get involved with reaching the community. I'm currently working on, but when you air this, we'll have passed an initiative with Selkirk College called Countdown, and it's going to be a TEDx event that's happening in 3 Sundays in November. And it will be recorded, so hopefully we can share that link when you air this interview. And it's all about the solutions to the climate crisis. And for me, I think that's super important. So ways that we at CCL, though, work in a few different areas. And one of them is with our elected representatives. And we have 2 different MPs that cover our listening area. Well, I don't know. I mean, the Kootenai Lake area is all with a conservative MP, Rob Morrison. And then I'm in the riding, other part of the West Kootenai riding with Richard Cannings. And so they're quite different conversations with them and their understanding of the urgency of the climate crisis. And so we are working with trying to educate Rob Morrison a bit more about this issue. And so that's one thing that we've done, again, with respect, but persistence. And then we also tend to encourage our members to engage with the media as well. So, you know, write letters to the editor or op-eds, things like that. And also trying to empower young people as they need any help with anything. So the BC election's going on right now, and they're hosting a couple of forums focused on youth. And so, yeah, just having conversations, helping them know that, yeah, they're on the right track. And it's, you know, here are a few suggestions, things like that.
Laura, do you think you could provide like maybe 1 or 2 specific examples of campaigns or ideas or topics that you lobby for?
Yeah. Well, so Citizens Climate Lobby in Canada has been focusing a lot on carbon pricing and the need for the price to rise steadily over time. Not particularly the most sexiest kind of thing, but it's actually really critical because, as we know, the tailpipe, the price right now in British Columbia is way too low. People don't really think about it when they're filling up at the tank, let's say. That it needs to be a long-term signal so that fossil fuels are no longer the cheaper option, which it often is. Another thing that we're working on, again, these are like larger policy pieces that, and the reason why we're called Citizens Climate Lobby is because we lobby our elected representatives. And so this is just one you asked about policy pieces. These are things that we're working on a larger scale. So the climate change accountability is federally making those targets stronger and be legislated targets and have an independent body that helps to oversee to make sure that we reach our targets. In Canada and in BC, we are doing a lot of work on fossil fuel subsidies, so subsidies to the oil and gas sector, which are huge. They're huge. If we put that towards renewable energy and took that away, it would totally change things. And so that's something, again, that we're working on. And again, these are the bigger policy pieces. But then also locally, I think we try to let people understand, first of all, that importance of those bigger policy pieces. And we also try to engage in campaigns that are maybe fun. Like, I don't know if you saw the Parachutes for the Planet. That was an initiative that we worked on in the last year or two. And one of our members, volunteers, went to elementary schools and they painted, you know, these beautiful parachutes that are basically like a round circular canvas, and try to have that messaging of those climate solutions. And so engaging young people, talking about what they'd like to see for the future, what concerns are, and things like that. Talking about it, I think, is one of the critical things that we try to encourage locally.
At the Youth Water Festival, some of your volunteers brought some parachutes for the kids to paint, and I'm pretty sure it was the kids' favorite thing. And I just remember seeing one of your volunteers just like basically having the kids all in a circle and like getting down with them and, you know, just really explaining what climate change means and doing it in such a way that was like accessible for the kids. And I really just see like the quality of the work of your volunteers in outreach. And it was really inspiring to see. And
a shout out to Judith Betts there. I'm pretty sure that was her. And she's a retired teacher, which is so great because she knows how to communicate well with people, with kids.
She was amazing. It was definitely Judith Beth. She works so well in the community. She does amazing things. And there's another, I guess, a group of young people that come to mind that I know that you've been working with. And I'm interested in understanding the connection between either yourself or Citizens Climate Lobby with Fridays for the Future, as young people who have been very active in speaking out for climate justice. And I'm interested to hear more about that.
Yeah. Well, as far as Citizens Climate Lobby goes, the national director, her daughter, Sophie Mather, was the first young person to actually participate in a climate strike in Canada. And we did have it in our action sheets, actually, to help support young people that wanted to participate in climate strikes, you know, kind of early on. And so that was nice because I was interested anyhow, but it kind of gave a little push. We have national actions, and sometimes they are things that really resonate. And I did know that I talked to a 16-year-old young woman named Daniela who lived in Winlaw and was really interested, but not able to feel like confident enough to organize it on her own. And so then I reached out to Alyssa Tiberio, and she was excited to help sort of mentor Daniela initially to get that first strike going. That was February, I think, in 2019, February or March in 2019. It was a cold day. They did such a good job getting people out. It was really just the two of them and, you know, a little bit of mentoring. And what my thoughts are on the role of adults in this, or, I mean, I don't really even like the word adults because young people are, I think, equivalent in terms of their understanding and their abilities. And so I would say that, I guess, older adults, my role is to sort of step back and let them take the lead and see how we can help. And so that's been how I've approached it. We offer them our Zoom line for meetings, and they've been meeting on Zoom before the pandemic, so they can have youth because, you know, they don't now oftentimes have mobility. And if meetings are in the evenings, there's no buses and things like that. So just being able to facilitate those conversations and let them figure out what's needed. And if a permit is needed, you know, kind of step in there and try to help with that or try to get it waived. You know, there were just a lot of the logistics that seemed overwhelming. But it's definitely just there as support. And when there's an event, get, you know, letting people know and getting people out, that kind of thing.
Thanks, Laura. That's so great to hear about all the youth engagement that Citizens Climate Lobby is doing. I think it's really important for people to realize that the issues that we're going to see in the future with climate change are going to have to be and will be tackled and be the responsibility of our children, basically. These youth are going to have to face these challenges as they age and as these problems become worse. And, you know, I just feel so glad and grateful that these initiatives are taking place and that we're starting to inform youth. Because when I was young, even, it wasn't that long ago, there wasn't really a lot of talk about climate change. I remember hearing climate change for the first time, global warming on the news. And I asked my mom about it and she had no idea what that even was. So this progression, although slow, is so important. And it's really great to hear.
Really, such a shout out to all those young leaders out there that really have taken the lead in the Fridays for Future movement. And I've heard that they've been impactful. Like if their dad's a CEO of an important company or, you know, there's been shifts there because of the influence of youth. And what's also super exciting about that is that so many of the people leading the Fridays for Future movement are young women. And I just think that's so important to have those, their voices heard, because oftentimes not heard enough in the world.
Absolutely. Thank you, Laura. What are some of the biggest challenges with educating people about climate change?
Yeah, good question. I think it's wanting to even go there, broach the topic. And it's oftentimes just engaging in it, it's feeling so despairing, kind of like we were talking about before, just sort of bringing that energy down. Who wants to talk about climate change? And so shifting it to creating a better future is so important. And it's something that I try to do, but oftentimes I just, there are times when it's like, oh God, you know, smoke from wildfire. Do we really feel like talking about climate change right now while we're already pretty depressed? And so I think finding those exciting ways to let people know, you know, what we can do this. We can, you know, have healthier air and healthier water and create jobs that are good and in our communities and, you know, and things like that, to find positive solutions. And I think it's important to try to let people see examples on the ground and how that can be done in our communities.
I definitely can resonate with that, talking about climate change. And I feel like I should take a lesson from you in spinning it to the positive and imagining a world that is sustainable and equitable for everybody, rather than just mentioning the facts when people are talking about the issues that we're surrounded by, which are harrowing, and they should be taken seriously. But I agree, as far as inspiring action, it's always better to come at it from a proactive and a positive light. And I see you doing that very well.
Oh, thank you. I don't know how much I actually comes across, so I appreciate that.
So what are some challenges you've had lobbying at the local government level? And I guess what is like the general receptiveness of our local leaders to your campaign?
Well, so I think as far as at the municipal level and within the regional district, we have some real great folks that, you know, I'm always learning from. So I don't feel like I need to convert them at all. They are on the ground doing the really hard work. There are some people that are, like, for example, in Nelson, that are a bit resistant to some of the climate action. Hopefully by the time this airs, the new climate plan will be out and they'll have figured out a way to get over differences and be less maybe scared of going to unknown territory by addressing climate change. I think that that's the biggest obstacle in local government. And I understand that. And I think it's really important when we have conversations that we try to come from understanding and shared values and things like that, and empathy rather than shaming and calling people out publicly, because that just oftentimes reinforces their views. And I understand why, for example, some in the city of Nelson and staff would be possibly resistant to going down a new path because they're cautious of, you know, the revenue and what they've done. And, you know, doing what they've done seems to work. And so it's maybe it feels a little risky or scary, but I think that there are so many great examples from across the country and around the world, people that are having solutions that save money and make a lot of sense and make the community a better place, that I think that's really important. And a shout out to the Climate Caucus, which is a group of municipal elected leaders and council members and mayors across the country. And that started right here in Nelson, Rick Lochtenberg, city council member, and also part of Citizens Climate Lobby. He launched that, and our co-leader with our local chapter, Judy O'Leary, really helped on the ground, kind of like getting the logistics going. And that has been really great at getting ideas together at the local level. And they put together some great documents that are really helpful along that way to kind of keep that sort of fear away, like, oh, it's new territory. And like, no, it's not. People are doing it, and it's creating better communities by addressing climate.
It takes so much courage. Like, I can hardly imagine how much courage it must take to get out there and to communicate these views and these passions, especially to people who are kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum in terms of like their understanding or the comprehension of these issues. I try and be an advocate in my own home, my own bubble, my friendships and my family, and even that can be exhausting sometimes. And so I really commend the work that you're doing and the work that your organization is doing. I can't imagine how much grit, you know, you really got to push through to be able to continue to get up there and do that. And you're doing this for all of us. And so thank you. Thank you for continuing to push for a better future for all of us.
Thanks for that.
So we wanted to ask you, what changes have you seen happen since you started in this line of work? So both local attitudes to climate change and then also climatic impacts.
Yeah, so what I've seen is that people are way more accepting of talking about climate change now. It used to be such a taboo subject, and now people are talking about it, and that is really great. I feel like in Canada we've had a real shift in that conversation, and all parties are at least acknowledging that climate change is real and we need to do something about it. How ambitious certain parties are versus others is a different story, but I think you know, on the radio, you know, you hear about climate change, and I think the people are a lot more open to discussing and talking about it. Some of that, though, is related to the more severe impacts that we're seeing. I saw such a huge difference after our big wildfire seasons in 2017 and then 2018, where we had a month of smoke and people were, it became very much mainstream. When you're breathing it in your lungs, I think it became a lot more real, people. And unfortunately, that lived experience is more powerful. It's too bad that we are having to get to this point. Yeah, and then like the wildfires again in California this year and Oregon and Washington, and then the smoke all coming up and filling our valleys with, you know, hazardous air quality in the middle of some beautiful late summer days. It's sad and depressing too. And so trying to get people to realize it's not too late and not just to like, oh, we're screwed. That's kind of also a challenge in that conversation. But yeah, the impacts are getting worse and the weather that's changing. And I do think that is bringing awareness, and it's really just so overwhelming if you look at the scientific consensus. But I think as one of you were mentioning, showing data doesn't necessarily resonate with a lot of people. Being a scientist, I love data, it does, but some people, they need to have that shared experience and the stories. I think that's what really resonates.
Yeah, exactly. Like starting to build that a common ground and having those conversations with people. It's just thought that I've been having, because we've talked a lot about community and people coming together and just how, you know, us taking individual actions or leaving it up to companies and corporations to make changes. We really just need to mobilize ourselves as a community, as a group, to make those changes and actually provide lasting attitude shifts. To find that common ground is essential for that. And to address like the communal dread that we're feeling, because these are impacts that are going to affect all of us. Like you said, we're all breathing the same air, all seeing the smoke.
Mm-hmm. I do think that climate grief piece does need to be worked with and not just dismissed. So, yeah. You know, doing this work, it's hard work, as you were mentioning, Kayla, and there's days when it's really depressing. And if I just shrug that off and say, oh, well, all's good, you know, that's not authentic either. And so trying to work through that. And, you know, so there's with a few practitioners that focus on Joanna Macy's work with the Act of Hope and the work that reconnects. I think it's helpful for everyone to recognize that we are seeing difficult things. I mean, I look out over the mountain behind my house and, you know, I'm seeing trees dying, and that really affects me. That makes me really sad. And I take a walk through a sort of a dying forest regularly with my dog, and it makes me sad. And it's acknowledging that makes me sad. And there's not anything I might be able to do right now for that particular dying forest, but I'm trying to think of how I can help, you know, regenerate the soil in another area and help maybe I have a bunch of new little baby trees and, you know, maybe they'll grow up. Taking some action on the ground, I think related to the grief, is important. Just feeling and being in those special places that can be healing, I think, is also important.
Yes, very well said. Really spoke to me for sure. So in 2019, you won the Susie Hamilton Legacy Award for your work advocating for climate action in the community. And I just want to know, what did it mean for you to be recognized for this work in that way?
It was really special, really humbling, because I know when I was nominated, there were a lot of other women that were doing some pretty amazing work in the community. So it was nice I was nominated, but I didn't expect to win it. And so it really felt nice to be acknowledged, and with, you know, someone like Susie Hamilton, her family, and that remembering and reiterating the work that she did, it felt really nice to be recognized. And I just really appreciated, I guess, the community support there for the work.
I can imagine. And you're so deserving of it, Laura. And congratulations. I know it's like a year late, but congratulations.
Thanks. And I'm not sure I can maybe add some more to that. I was looking around to see if I had my plaque, but I think I moved it. I got something from Susie's daughter. It was just a really heartfelt letter thanking me and honoring her mother's memory. And it just brought tears to my eyes reading that, and it was really touching.
It was so special. Oh, that's so nice to receive. Thank you for sharing that. So we're wondering, Laura, how do you maintain such a positive outlook when discussing such grim subjects? Does your positive demeanor reflect how you really feel, and how has your outlook changed over the years?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. I kind of self-identify myself as being a pessimist, you know, in life. I've tried to overcome being a pessimist for so many things. And so trying to not look at climate change as this negative thing is challenging. And one thing I do is I try to surround myself with people that are not like me. Because that can really drag me down if all we do is just talk about what's wrong. And so, you know, that's one of the reasons that drew me to, you know, an organization like CCL, where we do try to focus on solutions and on the positive and on what we can do rather than just being disempowered. And so I think for myself, it does take self-care, take some support from you know, family and friends, and, you know, time for daily self-care as much as I can as well. So if that's taking, you know, 10 minutes to do some meditation, you know, something really short, even just breathing, and try not to overwhelm myself with just the negative news, but to try to, and I subscribe to a few different email groups that like Clean Energy Canada that talks about like all the things that are going on that's good. And the Energy Mix is another one that talks not just about sort of the melting of the Arctic, the ice, but, you know, also the exciting things going on in businesses around the world, or other countries' ambitions and things like that. So, you know, we really are in the edge of really exciting times. I love the quote, I think it's Joanna Macy, that says, like, what a time to be alive, right? I mean, to be here at this crossroads and to be part of just a little small little part of a bigger shift, and that we can do this. But, you know, we don't do this alone, we do it with other people, and it's working with other people that keep me going. And I'd have my head in the sand otherwise.
I really love that sentiment. It's like, we've all experienced these challenges, you know, maybe not speaking like exactly to climate change, but challenges in our life, it's often an opportunity for growth, even though in the moment it seems really hard and you just don't know how you're going to get through it. Is, I mean, that's when we do all of our growing and do our best work. So that's a great way to put that. And I'll try and keep that in my brain when we're doing work around the lake for sure. So you hosted a radio show, an award-winning radio show, I believe, The Climate of Change on Kootenai Co-op Radio. I want to know, what inspired this project, and can you tell our listeners a little bit about this program?
Yeah, well, the shout out goes to Tanya Code, who took the lead on this. And I know she'd been thinking about this for a while because she was actively volunteering with Kootenai Co-op Radio. And she was inspired by a speaker that we had locally in the area, Tom Rand, and wanting to find ways to have, you know, positive messaging on climate change. And I said, sure, you know, when she was looking for people, but Annie Holtby also was involved. And I would say I was kind of in the bit of the backseat on that with Tanya, and Annie did almost all of the interviewing. Thank you for interviewing. I know it's hard. And I was super shy of a microphone at the time. I was like really terrified of public speaking for a long time. And this is kind of early on when I was sort of finding my voice, I guess. So we used to have the funnest times recording these. We didn't do it live, so we would do these recording sessions and would just be laughing as we stumbled on our words and had to reread things. And Tanya took all of that and wove it into the show that it was. And so I would definitely say that Tanya takes most all the credit. I gave ideas on who to interview, themes for shows, and did an update oftentimes on things going on in the community and about Citizens Climate Lobby and what we're doing locally. But yeah, Tanya did the bulk of it, and Annie did a lot as well. So, but thanks for mentioning it. We had to stop doing that as Tanya's time shifted, and she shifted to other priorities because we couldn't do it without her and all of the amazing editing that she did.
Great. That's awesome. So I guess working with some really great hosts like Tanya, what would your advice be to novice podcast hosts like us?
I think don't be afraid to do it, you know, and asking questions. You guys are doing a great job with the questions, and I know you're going to have tons of content, and so you're going to have to shift through it, and being able to repeat things if you need to, since you're not doing it live, is good. I know when we were doing it with Tanya, like, okay, if you screw up, you just pause, say it again, and they just easy to clip that out. Finding speakers, making them feel comfortable, like you guys are doing with me, you know, so it's an easy conversation is important. I know that the post-processing can be a lot more work than it did. I know she wove in music, which was really nice, and broke things up, and but also had long interviews as well. And I think people's attention spans can be expanded beyond the, you know, 2 or 3 minutes that we have on videos on the internet. You know, I think that longer conversations are possible.
Thank you, Laura. That's great advice. And yeah, I hope so. I hope people will be able to tune in for a little 45-minute long segment. There's so much good knowledge that we're sharing. And so that's our hope. But thank you. We're wondering, are there any actionable or direct or specific goals that Citizens Climate Lobby is taking on or looking toward with their climate action and advocacy? And then maybe more specifically within the Nelson community, like, is there a specific goal that you guys are striving for at the moment?
Yeah, that one's tricky. We know we support all these local initiatives, like the Eco Society is 100% renewable. You know, one thing that I'm very interested in is getting a climate hub off the ground, being CCL being part of it with other groups like Friends of Kootenai Lake would be great. So I'm hoping after the 100% renewable plan, which is coming out this week, and the Nelson climate plan comes out, that we can find ways to better collaborate with one another and share initiatives of what's going on. Because we're 100% volunteer. We don't have the capacity for like large local campaigns like, you know, the 100% renewable campaign, for example, but we can amplify things. So most of what we do locally, though, is, you know, education and awareness building rather than, you know, large campaigns just because of capacity on the ground that we are able to actually do something.
I think sometimes just having people like CCL or people like you just to ask those questions too is a big action in itself, right? For those who are taking direct action or trying to put together plans and that sort of thing, just expressing support is like a huge help to people doing the work for sure. Is there anything else you'd like to mention or bring forward? We've sort of come to the end of our questions, so we'd kind of like to turn it over to you.
Yeah, one thing I'm working on now is an initiative called, I mentioned the community climate hubs, and I'm helping out with Climate Reality Canada's community climate hub initiative. And so I'm a regional organizer for no small area, interior BC and the north, but helping local communities either establish a climate hub if nothing exists. So to try to get those people together that are working on things, but maybe in their own little silos or maybe by themselves. And also groups that are on the ground doing work, but maybe are just very, very local, to weave them together with a larger network of other hubs across the country to learn from each other and amplify success stories or challenges and things like that. So I've had great conversations with, you know, there's a hub starting in Cranbrook, which is great. Smithers, I've had conversation with, and they're likely going to be starting a hub, which is great. There are people on the ground that were doing work, but they weren't connected with any larger organizations. And I've been having conversations with people in the Kelowna area. And just recently, someone who loves going to council meetings, but that's what she likes to do. And there's other people that are like interested in sort of a data collection piece, which is called the National Climate League. Other people that are, you know, so there's just pieces of things going on in the communities, but nobody's kind of all come together. So for example, the person that loves council meetings just sent me an email so I could amplify it in their network of some big thing that was coming out in council. And if people can send an email or make a phone call in support of that. But without that network, it's really hard to increase our local ambition. And so it's been really exciting and rewarding talking to people in communities just like ours that are facing the same challenges and issues. That's been one thing that I've been doing that's been quite fun.
That sounds so cool. I would love to check in on that as it progresses. That sounds so valuable. There's often lots of people doing really great work, but like you mentioned, like people operate in silos. So coming together to bring our skills and our talents and our interests together to really bring that forward and create some change. I think that's huge. And that's so great. I'm glad to know that's going on.
Me too. That sounds super cool.
Yeah. So one other initiative that I've been working on is I've become a climate ambassador with Climate Interactive on their new En-ROADS climate simulation model. And it sounds kind of wonky and maybe not that exciting, but it's really fun. And so I do workshops, and I can do workshops with anybody. Workshop typically takes about an hour or an hour and a half to really fully integrate it, but it's looking at what climate solutions we need in order to keep warming to the goals of the Paris Agreement, or hopefully to 1.5 degrees. And what's fun about it is it's like we do it collectively with ideas. We think about what kind of changes that would mean. And then we also try to bring it back to, those co-benefits, and also considering equity and justice and those decision-making processes, and then bring it back to local action. And so a couple of takeaways that I like from that is that there is no like one silver bullet solution. A lot of times people have their own specific solution, whether it's, 100% renewable or going vegan or, restoring forests or agriculture, but we need it all. That's the thing. It's doable, but we need it all. And so for people to take those things that excite them and work on those initiatives, but in a strategic way that's within a bigger piece, I think is super important. And so the En-ROADS workshop is a great way to kind of have those conversations. And so anybody in the community that's interested in that, they can reach out to me.
Awesome. That's so exciting, Laura. Thank you so much for sharing this really cool opportunity. And our last question for you is, if you have a website or social media, events, anything, materials, anything else that you would like to promote?
Yeah, people can go to our Facebook page if they're on Facebook. That's Citizens Climate Lobby, Nelson West Kootenay, if you look for that. We have a website, but it tends to be more static, but you can check out that to see what events are going on. And people can reach out to me at ccl.westkootenay@gmail.com. And yeah, no blog right now, right? It would be great if I had time. Maybe sometime I'll get there.
Great. Thank you so much, Laura, for taking the time to talk with us. It's been an absolute pleasure. And it's so great to hear about all these initiatives that are going on in our community.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks so much for having me. It was really, really great talking to the both of you. And thank you for all the work that you're doing in the community as well. So it's really inspiring for me.
Oh, thank you so much, Laura. It's always a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for tuning in to Voices of the Lake. As always, you can follow Friends of Kootenay Lake on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram for ongoing updates on our projects and programs.
Huge thanks to our funders, the Osprey Community Foundation, Regional District of Central Kootenay, Nelson and District Credit Union, and Fortis BC for helping us bring these stories to you. Again, you're listening to Out There by First After the Fire. Find more of their music on their website, firstafterthefire.com, Facebook, or on Spotify.
Down in the valley lies a meadow golden warm, gives me no direction, though I see that coming storm. Out there, there's a coyote looking for easy prey. Time runs like a river.